This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Center yourself?
Yes.
Serious. Are you centered?
I feel like I might be.
Are you in the center?
I'm a little sideways.
A little wonky?
I might be a little wanky.
That's because this is my
favorite murder. The podcast with the consistently worst opening in the history of podcasts.
You know.
We invite you in slowly. With awkwardness.
Right. By making you want to turn it off.
But
you stick around.
Because you're like, maybe this could get worse.
That's Karen Kilgariff. That sigh is Karen Kilgariff.
And that fake sigh is Georgia Hardstark.
Hi.
We're here to talk to you about true crime and all the things that we have now associated with true crime.
Which is everything.
Which pretty much anything.
Anything, everything, all of it.
The thing I'm loving now is just consistent pictures of old razor blade holes in people's bathroom cabinets.
Like 2018 is all about shit hidden in walls.
Yes.
And especially if you have an old-timey medicine cabinet, go check yours. I bet there's so many people listening like, what are you fucking talking about?
Yeah.
Go downstairs. I don't know if you're upstairs. I don't know why your bathroom's downstairs.
Wait, first of all, why are you upstairs? Go downstairs.
Someone's in their car right now. They don't know.
So go upstairs.
Go upstairs.
To the double-decker bus.
You know.
The double-decker bus driver.
How you do it.
Go upstairs.
Go upstairs to your mansion. Go into the bathroom. Why don't you have a bathroom upstairs?
Yeah, that's so weird. Everyone does. And why don't you?
Do you? And then open your cabinet, and is there a thing that says razors can go in here or whatever the fuck, an old-timey font?
Yes. Is there a little old-fashioned hole that seems haunted and could have bloody remnants of somebody in it?
So much DNA. So much vintage DNA. Ooh, that would be fun.
And just maybe you stare at it for a couple hours, then you start to pull at it.
Then you write a book of short stories about every person who's put a razor into that fucking hole.
First it's an old guy, then it's a young guy, then it's a lady shaving her legs.
Yes. Can we get a woman? This is why is the patriarchy taking over your short book of short stories?
Never forget, women shave way more than men.
So much more.
We're just all of our bodies. Yeah. Face and legs.
All of it. Listen, when you get to be 30 something, you're gonna shave your face too.
One of my favorite tweets is our friend Morgan Murphy, hilarious comedian. So Morgan funny. Murphy. She has my favorite tweet of all time, which is your girlfriend shaves her toes.
Holy just like shit.
Yeah, just a little drop of hardcore information.
Ooh, that's good.
Sorry, it's the
truth.
That's
like a like an Italian. Mwah.
Yep. Just get it done real quick. Yeah. You don't need 240 characters to get the good stuff going.
Amen. You know, I had to take the like close-up mirror down from my wall in the bathroom. Look at this mirror.
Yeah.
Like, real close at all the hairs and stuff. I had to take it down.
I save that special occasion, hotel rooms only.
Good call. Because, but then you're like, what is wrong with me?
I know.
And then you look at your face and you're like, why hasn't anyone told me?
But when I was growing up, we got those for Christmas one year, my sister and I, when I was like 14
with
and she
the
was
lights?
16.
Because yes. Your mom was like, girls.
It was someone else that gave them to us.
Holy shit.
And I used to sit at my desk in my room with the lights out and that thing on it, like switching it. You know how it'd be like day, evening, night, whatever. Evening and night are the same. But not on this mirror. It was like one was green, one was bright, one was like really pinky.
What if
rosy.
You're after like? What if you're at like a late afternoon to night party? Like that evening is gonna come, and you're gonna need to look your best.
You're
in
gonna
that
have
light.
To. Yeah, you have to adjust your eyebrow plucking to the light.
Or men will never love you, and you'll never find a husband.
Never find a man. You will not land a man at this garden party unless you pluck your chin correctly.
Your Jessica McClintock dress can only get you so far. And that fucking updo, that permed updo.
You better get your list of topics to talk about in small talk conversations.
Yes.
And you better shave your upper lip or thread it or do something.
Something.
And don't forget about those nose hairs because that's a reality.
Oh, girl.
Here's the worst one.
Oh, no.
Just every once in a while, I'll just catch a random black neck hair.
Yeah, I got the chin. I got the chin covered.
Oh,
you got the neck. You take the neck, I'll take the chin.
Neck might be like the next stage up.
Oh.
Since I'm like a whole generation older than you.
Question, is it going up or down?
I feel like it might be going down.
Oh, no.
No, it's horrible.
You're in for a treat.
I'm in for the night. That's why I do not leave my house. I can't trust my neck. I don't know what's coming out of there ever. Anyway.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. You got the mirror.
I would stare into it and pluck my eyebrows and look at my pores for so long that my dad would just keep walking by my bedroom door going.
Oh.
He would make a noise like it was a bug light. And I was like a praying mantis caught on a bug light. He's like, look at the bug light. The bug
You're
light.
Not helping, Dad.
Stop it.
You're not helping.
They never helped.
No. Why would they? They want you to suffer so you don't get an ego.
Well, it fucking worked.
And like reach great heights or whatever. You know why? Because then you're going to fall further. You're welcome, 14-year-old Karen.
See? It doesn't hurt as bad when you don't climb as high.
When you stumble upwards, it's better than when you climb upwards.
That's right.
Right?
Or soar upwards,
right.
God forbid.
Ugh, that takes so much effort.
That's for the rich.
That's for like people who don't have friends or like time for friends.
Yeah.
Time for pets.
Yeah, that's for people who are like, oh, I'm a concert clarinetist. Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Go do that then by yourself.
I can't have a dog or a cat. I'm never home. I'm working all hours. And it's like, well, then you're living your life wrong.
Yeah. You need a pet. Bring it with you. Bring it to the symphony with you.
Yeah. Let's teach it to fucking play a horn instrument.
Wait, speaking of which, can I tell you, sidebar, that I took my dogs to the dog beach.
Yeah, which is like, I'm so jealous. I can't take my cats to the dog beach.
You shouldn't. They would not have a good time. Mm-mm. But although it is one big cat box, really. I bet they'd be like, whoa.
Nope. I don't think that would happen.
Everywhere we go, we can shit. But because it had rained so crazy down here, there was so much garbage and seaweed on the beach. Frank was like, in heaven. It was like a mini beach garbage dump.
What was in there?
Well, there was one whole huge fish.
No way!
We walked by just a big dead fish.
That's so cool.
Then there was lots of it was pieces of plastic that looked like they were from legs, pantyhose containers, uh-huh, like the eggs.
Uh-huh.
Where you're like, why are there so many plastic eggs around? Then there was like basically an IKEA futon frame.
What?
There's a little kid in the surf that was pushing out a huge, like, what looked like the gnarled base of an oak tree. And he was just, it was like,
no, mom, where's his mom or dad?
They were like, oh, good, a project. You go do that in the riptide.
One word, pathogens. Just everywhere.
One small cut on your foot.
One tiny cut. Do you watch House? Go watch House.
They'll never trace that disease.
I know.
All those beautiful young doctors on the beach.
Oh, my God.
And there was, like, oil. It was really dirty, and I took my shoes off, and then I was
No, Karen.
I didn't think about it until, like, 45 minutes in, and I was like, oh, there's no way I'm not going to have some crazy mystery rash.
This podcast is going to change to my favorite staph infection. Like, tonight, get your fucking feet off my couch.
Everything's covered. I keep everything in surgical booties until I'm clear. 2 weeks
Please
cleared.
Do. This is what happens when you leave the house.
But what would your favorite staph infection be?
Oh, God.
Because
there's a lot.
There's so many good ones.
I really do love foreign bodies.
Foreign bodies? I like a good jump on a rusty nail.
Ooh.
I did that once in sixth grade.
I don't like that.
It was intense. But I think I did it because I was at a slumber party that I didn't want to be at. It was very intensely Christian. I was like, I've got to get out of here. And the next thing I knew, I was like jumping in a field and I landed on a rusty nail. I was like, well, bye. Looks like I got to call my mom.
Unless we can break into your parents' liquor cabinet and just pour some alcohol on this or wherever.
I think I need to be driven away from here. Whatever the medical procedure is, it's not going to take place.
It's not praying over my foot.
No, it's not going to be with your weird Christian records. Got to go. Love the Lord. See you at school.
But I can't handle this. I'm watching a show on Netflix that
yes.
you might be watching that everyone loves called The End of the Fucking World.
No.
Have you heard of it?
No.
Oh, it's so good.
What is it?
Okay. It's like if you took Harold and Maude.
Yes.
Anti-Wes Anderson.
Anti?
Like...
angry at Wes Anderson?
Like anti, like cute and like kitschy in that way, but like...
So no shot is centered. Nothing is... nothing's
okay,
doubled up.
Maybe just Wes Anderson, but like dark Wes Anderson.
Okay, got it, got
okay,
it.
Okay, and then like, it's just like, it's dark, but like cute and cool. It's like these, it's really good, and there's, it's murdery, and there's these two young kids in it, and they're like, he looks like Harold from Harold and Maude, and she's super adorable, and maybe they murder someone, we don't know. Like,
it's
a really good show.
I love it.
Should I read you the thing instead of telling you...
Sure.
About it in my own special way.
I feel like what you just did was very clear.
Listen, if I say it's good, it's probably good.
I mean, I feel like you're batting, I'd say 8 for 10.
Sure. Where'd I go wrong?
I say that? I don't know. I couldn't give you 10 out of 10. I just couldn't.
Well, that's fair enough.
Because I want you to climb. I want things to be hard. I want you to earn it.
If you compliment someone without a little bit of a negativity in it, they're just gonna not try anymore.
That's right. They're gonna get a big head.
Uh-huh.
And you know, that's the worst thing that can happen.
Right. Then they're gonna show up at a fucking garden party with hairs coming out of everywhere.
Oh, look at me, I'm so pretty, I have a beard.
Yeah.
No, this is wrong. What's happening?
You're never gonna find a husband.
You will not.
You and your Jessica McClintock dress.
You will be loved.
We'll grow old together.
Oh, sure. You can wear that dress all you want. But the floral's not going to land
Mm-mm.
you a man.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. It's not the florals.
No, it's the clear chin.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smooth chin. Mm-hmm. A feminine chin.
So shut up.
Shut it. What are we doing?
I don't know. What do you have to talk about?
Okay.
Anything?
So, yeah, I do. 2 weeks ago, the last in-person upstairs. What do we call this podcast when it's us?
Oh.
Not live. I talked about the Beast of Jersey. I was making conversation with somebody and they were like, what was your last show about? They had never listened to the podcast.
Oh,
they were just trying to be polite. And I went into a synopsis of what the Beast of Jersey was all about. And as I was saying it, I was like, stop talking now.
You were like, oh, they were being polite. They don't want to know about the fucking leather mask this person wore, plastic weird rapey that they raped out of anyone.
They raped everyone they could get by themselves.
Which is why I think people listen to this podcast and why you and I are doing it is that we realize we can't talk to anyone about it.
That's exactly right. We all have to meet here if we want to have these are not dinner conversations.
No,
these are your friend's new girlfriend.
Okay. This is like a podcast of I don't get the face of someone who isn't interested when I tell them about this. Isn't it cool? And then, but usually they kill inside their own race, and they didn't kill inside their own race anymore. And he did this.
That's
no,
amazing.
Nobody wants to know about that.
That's in real life. People are like, anyhow,
jeez,
did you hear about the bomb?
Right.
So anyway, But as some of you know, I did talk about the kind of cows because the islands we were talking about were Jersey and Guernsey.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I began to hold forth like a cow expert.
Mm-hmm. Because, you are.
Because I am a C+ cow expert. That's
okay.
How much I got it right.
Dude.
And I'm very angry and ashamed because I grew up amidst cows. I had to smell their shit every day. It was all hay and cows and alfalfa and nonstop dairy. So the fact that I got this wrong is both shaming and then also I'm not sure why I keep...
I mean, proximity pretending. Doesn't equal fucking...
Knowledge. Very true. Here we go. Are you ready?
Always.
This is from Gail.
Okay, Gail.
She gets right into it. You're absolutely right about the Jersey and Guernsey cattle breeds coming from the islands in the English Channel, but a little not right about...
Aw, that's so nice.
A little not right. You're just a little not right, which is so accurate, about what those cows look like. Jerseys are the smaller brown ones, and their babies look like little deer.
Little babies.
They are the cutest.
Oh my God.
Even the groans are cute. Guernseys are brown and white cows, and they aren't as common. The black and white cows are Holsteins. That's what I was talking about.
Okay.
Both Jerseys and Guernseys are known for their rich and flavorful milk that is high in protein and butterfat, although the milk that you buy from the store has been standardized in its nutrient composition by removing fat and then adding it back in.
The government.
So the fat content, fuck the government. So the fat content is most important for making other dairy products besides milk. Jerseys are particularly popular because even though they are small and don't make as much milk as larger cows, they are much more efficient at making milk. Think of them as the Priuses of dairy cattle.
And I will from now on.
I'm a professor of dairy and animal science.
Oh my God!
Hell yes. So I was pretty tickled to hear you guys talk about cows while I was simultaneously listening to your podcast and scrambling to edit PowerPoints about cows before the semester starts.
It's like
again.
Her episode.
It was like made for her.
She's like, listen, I hate serial rapists.
Yeah.
But here's my chance to shine.
But still, I found something I could love here.
And that's what we try to do.
This is what it's all about. And then she said, cheers to all, and especially the pets, Gail. And then in parentheses, it says, which in my case is a woman scientist name.
I don't know what that means. Oh, that's great.
So thank you, Gail. Also, thank you, Sarah, Emma, Allie, and everyone who tweeted us this correction. We got emails from Sarah, Emma, and Allie also that were all equally as informative about cows.
That's nice.
So just so everybody knows, Jerseys are the prettiest cows. Guernseys are like Jersey's less pretty sister.
Oh, now we're going to get hate mail from cows.
I'm going for it. Holsteins are black and white cows like from an old country folk painting.
Uh-huh.
And then the ones I grew up with were heifers, which are the orange and white ones. I believe they are. Or maybe that's...
I have never known so much about cows in my life.
And isn't it fun? Like, you can now take this straight to a dinner party.
Yeah. Instead of talking about murder.
You go straight into listing cows and their colors.
You know how everyone loves to talk about...
You just wait for a nice pause in the conversation.
Yeah. Did you know...
The ones that look like deer are Jerseys.
They're heifers. And then you got, fuck the government.
Fuck the government. May I have that salt and pepper, please?
Because, can I say, correct nobody really, but just to read this. Okay. Hi, ladies. And then in parentheses says, Stephen, animals. Oh, and this is called Some Montessori Insight About Georgia's Dirty Feet.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Blah, 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 really nice stuff. And then on episode 102, you mentioned attending Montessori schools, and Georgia recalls having a feet-washing bucket. As a Montessori teacher, I was cackling in my car. This dirty feet scenario is totally not a fever dream. The goal of Montessori schools is to teach independence, life skills, and appreciation of nature. You were lucky enough to get to go outside and explore and learn, allowing those feet to get nasty. Bless your teacher for allowing the children to wash their feet. Water, so fun. We only have a hand washing station. I'm not nice enough to let my little ones take their shoes off outside. Anyways, thanks for all you do. Stay sexy, wash those feet, don't get murdered, Jamie.
Well, Jamie, though, I bet that's smart because you don't want a child staph infection.
Just don't step on a fucking rusty nail.
Do not. They'll jump on it just to get out of school.
Oh, definitely.
Lazy. Anyhow. Oh, I guess this last one. This is just a fun email.
Yeah.
That Stephen pulled for us. Look and listen, David Fincher.
Yeah.
Is the subject line from Gina. Hi, ladies and honorary lady, Stephen Ray Morris.
Stephen's triumphantly raising his fists.
So good. Was watching Seven for the first time.
First time. Such a good movie.
You've had 29 years. I was watching Seven for the first time and noticed this. And then she pulled a screen cap and it's Morgan Freeman standing in front of Brad Pitt. And the line he's saying to him is, I want you to look and I want you to listen.
Yes.
Okay. And then she back in the email says, just saying, has anyone ever seen Karen and Georgia in the same room as Morgan Freeman? Karen and Morgan certainly share that deep, distinguished voice.
Oh, my God.
Lots of love, plus some sloth, greed, gluttony, etc. Yes. Gina. That's everyone's so goddamn funny.
If you haven't seen Seven Murderinos, Young Murderinos, go watch Seven.
Oh, my God. If you
so
haven't seen Seven,
creepy.
This conversation ends here.
Yeah.
Pause it.
pause it, go check your, go downstairs and check your, medicine cabinet.
That's right. Go back upstairs.
Go back upstairs to your, why is your TV upstairs and your bathroom's downstairs? It seems inconvenient.
Yeah. Because a basement bathroom and an attic TV room is just hard for the family.
Is your house only a basement and an attic? What does that mean?
Maybe you're a Dr. Seuss character. Exactly. Do you have a hat where that machines that clean the house come out of it?
Yeah. You might want to check your hat.
Check your fucking hat.
Check your hat.
And then check the fucking government, man.
Yeah. Tell them about cows. Inform them. Who goes first this week?
I think it's you, right?
Did I go? Well, then we had a live episode.
Oh, yeah, but didn't we say we were doing, we're not counting?
I think I'm first this week. I was counting on going first this week.
Good, because I had to do it last week.
Yeah.
I find it to be a burden.
Technically, yeah.
Technically,
you think I think going first is better because then I can fucking chill as shit.
Oh.
Drink my sparkling wine.
Oh, well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
So, but I can't go first every week because that would suck.
Yeah, that would suck. It does suck. It's like you kind of have to get everything up off the ground.
Right. All right.
You set a tone.
Yeah. And then
I'm not
trying
to intimidate you, but you really control the mood right now.
Just kidding.
Fuck.
Oh, no. Well, the thing too is, what if this is your murder? What if my murder is your murder and I go get it first?
Then you don't
have to go.
I can't wait. Then I just sit back and go like, yes, girl, tell it. Yeah.
Yeah. You forgot this part. Let me tell you this thing.
I'm telling you this fucking thing.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant, like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's M-A-D-E-I-N cookware.com. Goodbye. Why do I always remember lyrics to songs, Karen, that I haven't heard for years, but I always forget my email passwords?
I know, right? It's like our brains only want us to retain useless information, but with 1Password, that problem's solved.
1Password is an award-winning password manager that's trusted by families and large-scale companies alike.
If you're tired of being the person that everyone texts for a streaming login, hand that honor to 1Password. They let you share logins with people and with groups.
With 1Password, you can securely switch between any device type or operating system. That means if you're a family or business that uses both Mac and PC, you won't have trouble sharing your private data.
Don't let the name fool you. 1Password does more than just store passwords. It can autofill usernames, payment details, and personal information. And they notify you about potential data breaches.
For business operations, 1Password has a dedicated support team that will integrate its security tools into your existing workflow.
1Password saves everyone time. And we all know that time saved equals money saved. Your accounting department will thank you.
Don't just listen to us. 1Password was named Wirecutter's best password manager, and companies like Salesforce and IBM trust 1Password to secure their most sensitive information, so you can too.
Right now, our listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/MFM.
That's 2 free weeks at 1, as in the number 1, password.com/MFM.
1Password.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
Okay. And now we can start.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I found this story and decided to do it, and then found out that it is also an I Survived episode. She's in an I Survived episode.
Yes.
So this is special for you.
Thank you.
So I watched the I Survived episode. It was great. But also I got a lot, like most of my information from an article in the Willamette Week by Beth Slavic from 2016. So
cool.
Thank you, Beth. Good job.
Yay.
We're proud of you. Okay, so this is the story of Susan Kuhnhausen.
Okay.
Any bells yet?
No.
I feel like I'm like reading to the master.
Can I just do a quick brag?
Yeah.
My sister said last weekend, I think it was, she was like, there's an I Survived on that's amazing right now. You need to watch it. A woman who escaped a serial killer. And I wrote back, does she have red hair and a green sweater? I've seen it already. And my sister goes, ooh, that was creepy. Because I know,
yeah.
I honestly have seen them all five times.
I've seen maybe two.
Okay.
You're the queen of this. So I felt a little, but I think that this is, you know.
Do you mind if I will listen to you?
And guess the whole time?
Yeah, I'll ring in when I think I know.
That's what this podcast is.
Yeah, girl.
This podcast isn't be quiet while I tell you about the story.
Could you please be quiet?
Interrupt the shit out of me with incorrect guesses.
This is the one time I've been interrupting you for 2 years straight.
Yeah.
But this is the one time you were like, could you please be quiet? This is an I Survived.
This is actually really... And wait, literally 2 years straight today.
That's right. It's our 2 year fucking anniversary.
Oh my God.
Of existing.
Of having real fucking personalities.
Yes.
Lives.
Having an interest that we shared.
Yeah.
That we thought this could possibly be interesting.
First day of the rest of our lives.
Insanely.
Dude, 2 years.
High five, Georgia Hardstark.
Thank you. You too, Karen Kilgariff. This
Thank
fucking
you.
Podcast would be going to Montessori. No, it wouldn't. That's too young, right?
It's too young.
Okay.
But unless
daycare.
We're both working.
Daycare. Working moms.
Yeah.
Listen, we get Steven, will you be this podcast nanny? Steven's the podcast nanny.
Yeah, I would think so.
Steven, thank you.
Yeah, I'll take care of you.
Okay.
You would be a manny, right?
Oh, right.
Steven, you came in, what, a year and a half? I mean, like 6 months in?
My, I guess, 2 year
of course he knows what's...
Yes.
There's a heart in his calendar.
Oh, yeah. No. It's like a little, like, in my locker. It's like...
Yay!
Cutouts. My 2 year anniversary is in May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to say right now that we'll get you something for your 2 year anniversary, and
yes,
then we
right.
won't.
But then we'll make up for it, and it'll be even better.
Yes.
That's exactly all I could hope
that's
for.
All that's all you've ever wanted.
That's how we do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know okay. how we do.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Susan Kuhnhausen. Okay. Here we go. On the evening of Wednesday, September 6th, 2006, 51-year-old emergency room nurse of nearly 30 years, Susan Kuhnhausen, ended her shift at Providence Portland Medical Center and headed to her appointment at Perfect Look Hair Salon in East Burnside Street. On East Burnside Street, Portland. I guess you know what that is. You
yes.
already know, don't you?
Mm-hmm. No, okay. I don't. I know that area, though, the Burnside District.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, Perfect Look. It's our new hair salon.
It's so good.
It's so good. Susan had moved to Oregon in the early 80s. She settled in Portland, and she was well-liked by everyone who knew her. Of course, everyone says she's outgoing, vivacious. She's this amazing nurse. She's loved by everyone. In 1988, when she was in her early 30s, Susan, along with a friend and her mom's help, placed a singles ad in the Willamette Week, which is what this fucking... I just realized this is what this article is from.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't put it together.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
That's a very popular... circular up
is
there
it?
In Portland. I think it still exists. Yeah.
Okay. Looking for, and so she placed a singles ad, which is how you used to find love.
Ugh.
It's like before.
Could you imagine?
No.
It's just like, oh, it's all like letters and numbers and like I'm a Taurus, S, F, L.
Looking for.
D.
I think my mom put one of those in like Irvine Weekly or whatever in the 80s.
Did she catch any good fish?
I'm sure she didn't. Jesus. The guys she dated were horrendous.
Were they sickening?
No, they were just like single dads in the 80s were creeps.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
A lot of transition lenses, a lot of mustaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This isn't about me.
Okay.
Or Janet.
It's always about Janet.
It's always about Janet. Okay. So she wrote, looking for, quote, someone different. And then about herself, she wrote, overweight, but not over life. Which I love so much.
That's a necklace instead of like live, laugh, love.
Overweight, but not over life.
But not over life.
And then you kick a stranger in the dick.
As he's reading that, hypnotized by your necklace.
You know the website Reductress? Mm-hmm. That I'm just upset. Like, their fucking headlines make me laugh so hard. They're and their so articles. Funny. It's like the Onion for women.
Yes.
They have like merch now, and one of their, they have a shirt that has an arrow, and it's up to, the arrow goes to your face and it says, "My vagina's up here."
They had one after the Golden Globes that said, "Zero quotes from men about the Me Too movement."
They're so funny.
It's so good.
Okay. Someone different. Overweight, but not over life, seeks SM, who wants more out of a relationship than just, quote, slender. Fucking girl. Yes.
Wow. And this is in the late 80s when none of these attitudes were allowed.
No, you go to fucking jazzercise and you diet and reduce, or yes, you're nothing and no one.
It's bulimia or bust, everybody. It was a hard time.
Yeah.
But then meanwhile, we were being tricked into ingesting fake diet food that was actually filled with sugar. So like, we all thought, yeah, New York seltzer was diet.
Yeah.
And we're like, this is so delicious. Yeah. And you drink like seven of them and it's just like drinking Coke.
Right. And then you scream at your kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
39-year-old Mike Kuhn-Hansen responded. And about him, Susan said, quote, "He had a nice voice. I was impressed he wanted to talk about deeper things," which I wrote, red flag. You know? No, he doesn't.
He goes straight to poetry. Yeah. Get out of there.
Deeper things.
Deeper than what?
Than what? Okay, their first date was in February 1988. Mike was adopted as a newborn in 1948, grew up in Portland. He told Susan he saw combat in Vietnam, but military records list him as a switchboard operator.
Oh.
Within the year, they drove to Reno to get married. So she marries this dude, Mike Kuhn-Hausen. Okay. It quickly soured. She said, quote, "It wasn't long after..."
Wait a second.
Don't give it away for the listeners at home.
I won't. I think I know.
Just say, give me like a keyword.
She finds him in the house?
No.
Okay.
But close. I think you do know. You're just not there yet.
Okay.
We got to get you a little further. And then you're like, yes.
Okay.
Da-da-da-da. It wasn't very long after we got married that there was no more hiking, no more going out. Yeah, because people say they're into shit, that they're not into shit. And then in a year, they're sick of you, which is why you need to start a relationship saying, "I like to sit at home and binge watch shit with my cats and yes, fucking get takeout."
Yeah, what's past like topical weekend interest?
Yeah.
That's the reality of the relationship.
Nobody likes to hike.
No, it's total dating bullshit.
It's stupid.
It's really dumb. It's for single, desperate, thirsty people. Literally and figuratively.
Literally thirsty people. Okay. Bah, 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 da, 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 married. Within a few years of the wedding, Mike got a new job as a janitorial supervisor for Oregon Entertainment, the parent company of Fantasy Adult Video. Oh. So basically, he started working for an adult video company as the janitor, which has to be like a bummer job.
Yeah.
Like, you don't come home from that fucking kicking your heels and hugging your wife.
Even if it's all paper products, uh-huh, and like guys in ties, there is still a level of light scum, I would say,
on everything.
That was his job just to mop off.
Totally. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Okay. So he starts slowly revealing to her in the early years that he'd never really been happy. His life philosophy, she says, was life's a shit sandwich and every day you take another bite until you die.
Fucking thanks, Garfield. Jesus Christ.
This is why everyone needs to go to therapy and get pharmaceuticals.
Yes.
Well, not everyone, but this guy clearly.
I mean, it's just that's all of life to you.
Yeah.
Like you have that attitude and you're not going to do anything to change it.
Like take a chill pill. And by chill pill, I mean a fucking Zoloft.
Xanax. Yes. Lithium.
Anything.
Something. Help yourself.
Okay. Mike chain smoked. He also pounded Diet Cokes.
Well,
which is
on.
Like, is that why are you being a dick about it? He was very controlling. He would hound Susan about her plans when she went out. He kept track of her spending and complained about all her purchases, which is like, shut up. I need to go to Perfect Look every 2 weeks or you're going to tell me I look like shit.
Yes, exactly. Also, if she is an emergency room nurse,
yeah,
she's pulling down. That is union wage. She's doing very well.
Yeah, your fantasy adult fucking video store is not the same wage.
Probably not. So, yeah, the spending discussion. Anyway, go ahead.
Let's talk about marriage. Okay. 17 years into their marriage, Susan is like, fuck this shit. She said, I cared about him, but I didn't want to live with him anymore. I wanted to be happy again. So in September 2005, she kicks him the fuck out of the house.
Good.
And he moves into his father's home. But Susan never changes the locks or the alarm code, which was their anniversary.
Well, why would she? It's her husband
right.
that she thinks she knows and has a relationship with.
Right.
Okay.
So she wasn't surprised after her hair appointment. She gets home. She's still in her scrubs. It's 6:37 p.m. She lives in Montevilla neighborhood. Comes home, finds a note by the microwave from Mike because they're still talking and stuff saying, Sue, I haven't been sleeping. Had to get away. Went to the beach. He said he'd see her on Friday or Saturday. Love me, he says. So Susan disarms the alarm, goes through the house to the front, grabs her mail, and she comes back inside and looks through the house to her bedroom and sees that it's really fucking dark in her bedroom abnormally. And she's like, oh, I thought I opened the drapes that morning. There's like something is off. She knew it immediately in the fucking insect part of her brain.
Well, there's what is scarier than that?
Yeah.
When you're standing in your house and there's something off. There's uh-huh. something that you didn't do. That is like yeah. I always have a lamp. There's a one lamp I never turn off.
Ooh.
And if that were off, if I came home and that were off, I would be like, well, I would think I got my electricity turned off, which happens constantly.
But well, my thing is like, if one of the cats aren't greeting me, there's something wrong in the house.
Yes,
you know, like
yes,
if they're
sure.
scared, there's a reason.
If my dogs aren't there barking at the window like I'm the mailman, I think they're both dead. Like I picture, oh,
yeah.
they ate chemicals, they ate whatever. Like I go yeah. through a whole thing of trying to go into acceptance about losing both dogs at the same time.
Oh no, Jesus!
And then George will like walk up like,
what do you want?
I was sleeping.
The other day, Vince and I came home and the whole house smelled like cigarettes. Like someone had just smoked a cigarette or was smoking a cigarette in the house. It was really fucking creepy. And we like went room to room and looked everywhere. And
what was? Did you have a window open?
No, I don't know what it was. It was probably someone in the hallway or something.
Wait, I think we've talked about this already. But did I ever tell you about my friends who live in New York and they are the producers of Eugene Merman's Comedy Festival.
Uh-huh.
And they put a camera in their house because they in their apartment they kept noticing little things moved so finally they put a camera in their house that would switch on if there was movement.
Yeah.
And so the guy was at work, it switches on, their landlord just is going into their house walking around, and it's one of the creepiest videos. They showed it to me, and she's just really slowly walking around and looking at everything.
Oh my God.
And she like at one point walks upstairs, which is just their bedroom, and is up there for like 3 minutes and then comes back down. I never told you about that.
No, I want to cry.
And then she just leaves. But it was like one of the creepiest, weirdest things I've ever seen.
How come she was moving shit?
It's like she would look over, like for a while she'd look at pictures or she'd like lean over. She was just snooping around.
I would
do
that.
So I'm sure one time she like pick up a magazine,
yeah.
looked at it and put it down thinking they'll never notice.
Oh my God.
Isn't that amazing?
You know that's happened in your life.
Oh my God.
Right? Yeah. Like someone's gone through your shit. When I was a kid, there was a certain like young period in my life, when I was like 12, where all I fucking did was snoop through my fucking family's shit.
Yes.
Just snoop.
100%.
It was so much fun.
I would always go through my mom's nightstand drawer
mm-hmm.
because there was always weird, super random shit in there.
Yeah.
But there was never anything good. But it would be like, if I dig back here far
yeah.
enough, there'll be something weird where I'm like, is this sexual? I'm not sure. And it never was. It was like never what I wanted it. One time I thought I found a porn under my parents' bed and I pulled it out and it was just an exercise like
videotape?
Yeah. I was going to say a VCR.
My friend and I went through, it was during this time, and I had a friend who was like, yeah, let's go through my mom's shit too. And we both had single moms, and we found like, it must have been given to her as a gag gift. Cause now that I'm older, I'm like, no one would use those on themselves. It's disgusting. But at the time, we were like, I think we like stopped looking through people's stuff after we found
yes.
this box of like weird dildo attachments.
Yes.
And we were both like, oh no.
Yeah.
And never talked about it again.
That's the thing that you learn depending from somewhere between when you're 11 and 14.
Yeah.
Which is you can go ahead and snoop uh-huh. all you want, but you have to land on the other side of snooping.
Yeah.
Which is not only that you're a snooper and you could get caught and then known as that.
Yeah.
But then you know something.
Yeah. There might be shit you don't want to know.
You're not even imagining what you wouldn't want to know.
Yeah.
And managing that.
No.
You're just being like, I know what this is going to amount to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it.
Do not.
Or, I mean, do, but just know that.
But then you have to die with some secrets. You could snoop up a secret that you're, then you're just like, well,
or
then
get a podcast have to know that. And talk about it years later.
It's true.
Okay. This isn't about me. This is about Susan.
That's right.
Disarming her alarm. It's dark in her room. She goes to her room. This is your last chance to guess what this is.
I know what this is because, sorry, Mike is not in the house?
No.
Okay.
But I know what you know. You think.
Okay.
You know, but you have no idea. From behind the bedroom door, a man suddenly lurches towards
That's
her.
That's right. It's a hired guy. Sorry. Sorry. Shit. Okay.
Susan doesn't recognize his face. He's got Dockers, a blue striped shirt on, and a tan baseball hat pulled down over his eyes. He has yellow rubber gloves on his hands and is carrying a red and black claw. Fucking hammer.
A claw hammer.
A claw hammer.
Ooh.
He swings the fucking hammer and his first blow lands on her left temple.
Okay. You hire a hitman and he's like, here's how I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to bludgeon her to death.
I'm going to, I choose to bludgeon a person as opposed to just shoot them and get out of the house.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
Okay.
So using her instincts and her 3 decades of experience in the ER, where, Karen, all the ER nurses are trained regularly in self-defense, learning how to slip out of headlocks and clutches.
Wow.
Susan knows instinctively to crowd her attacker, not to like cower and back off, because the blows land shittier if
the closer you are.
The closer you are.
That's which great. Is,
I'm not this... Don't legally, I am not telling you to do anything when you get attacked, etc.
Yeah.
And that would have less force, the swings of the hammer, if she's super close to him.
Yeah.
She fucking screams at him, who are you? What do you want? She's fucking yelling at him. But he doesn't answer. Susan's only 5'4", so she's 5 inches shorter than the man, and she has 2 bad knees from repeated injuries and her excessive weight, as she fucking clearly stated
in her singles
ad. She outweighed him because he was super skinny. So she says she slams her body up against his, attempts to push him over, but he doesn't fall. Instead, he pushes Susan against the bedroom wall, then says the only phrase that he's going to say that night, secretly between you and me, the last fucking thing he'll ever say.
Ooh.
You're strong. You're strong. And she says that the phrase sends surges of adrenaline through her because she said, quote, with hearing this phrase, she says, he's here to kill me. She realized at that moment, I don't know why, I don't know who he is, but his intent was clear. And those are his last fucking words ever.
Oh.
Susan pushes him again and says, who sent you? She wrestles the hammer from him and she fucking swings the claw 3 or 4 times into his skull.
Fuck.
She got the fucking hammer.
Yes.
He grabs it back. And so Susan grabs his throat and says, who sent you here? Squeezing his fucking throat. His face turns red and purple. And then he goes blue. Susan freaks out at that moment and lets go and tries to fucking run. He catches her though as she's running from the bedroom. They're in this narrow hallway together. He spins her around and punches her, splitting her lip.
Oh.
Punches her again and she falls to the floor. And when she looks up, he's standing over her with the hammer. And at that moment, she thinks, I'm going to die today.
Why'd she let go when his face was blue?
I mean, people don't want to kill people.
True, but fuck.
I know.
At least make him pass out.
Oh, I mean, yeah, but like you think close enough, right? The fact that he was able to get up.
I guess so.
Who knows?
I always think I'm smarter than people in near death situations.
So she knows she needs to get the hammer from him. So she pulls him to the floor with her. So he's standing over her and she fucking pulls him to the ground with her.
That's brilliant, actually.
I know. She starts to bite him in her mind thinking, I know I'm going to die, but I'm going to fucking leave teeth marks so people know that he, like, can find him.
Yes.
So she wrestling on the floor together. She bites his arm, his flank, and his thigh, and bites through his fucking zipper to his fucking genitals. to his dick.
Shit.
They can't write that in the Willamette, probably.
Probably not.
At the same time, she's going through his fucking pockets looking for ID so she can, like, throw his wallet under the bed so, like, the cops will know who it is.
Jesus.
I know.
Well, you know what? That ER, her working in the ER probably prepped her for so many crazy things.
No time to panic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a real, like, clear thinker in horrible situations.
Exactly. She said, I was like a downed power line snapping on the pavement. How cool is that?
Wow.
I know. The fight at this point had lasted, you know how long this fight had gone on? How long can you fucking fight for, do you think?
I would give it a good 19 minutes.
Okay, never mind. It's 14.
Oh.
But, however, that's a long time.
I thought you were
going
to say like 6 hours.
I can't even do 5 minutes of cardio without
I can't even walk up your stairs without being winded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
So we'll edit that out and then I'll say 6 minutes.
Okay. Great. Okay. Great. They're both wedged on their sides in the small hallway. She throws a leg over his body, climbs on top of him, hooks her left arm around his neck. So she's got him in a fucking chokehold, yes. WWE style. Says, tell me who sent you here and I will call you a fucking ambulance. And all he did was growl. And then she says, when I realized I was not going to ever regain the hammer, it came to me that I needed to become the weapon.
Shit, girl.
She says she leans forward, tightens her forearm against his throat, and he stopped moving. She grabs the hammer and runs outside to the neighbors. They call 911. Here's a quote from the 911 call. Do you need an ambulance? Do you need an ambulance? And the neighbor said, no, she's a nurse. She says, call an ambulance for the guy. He may be dead. She's like, I'm fucking fine. But she is not.
She's on adrenaline.
She doesn't know. She doesn't feel like as much of a badass about this as we think of her as a badass. She's right. Like, freaked the fuck out about it.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
I mean, not just that this happened to her, but that she killed a dude.
Right.
Okay.
Well, so, no, that's a horrible burden.
Yes. So the man was fucking dead. His name was Edward Haffey. He was a 59-year-old Vietnam veteran. An autopsy showed he had a near lethal dose of cocaine in his system.
Jesus.
When he died, relatives and friends told police he'd been raised in an upper middle class home and was an avid tennis player. So something fucking happened, and I bet it's cocaine.
Yeah.
He recently lived in a trailer on Northeast Killingsworth Street and had a long rap sheet. In Susan's basement, they find Ed's backpack, and inside is a container of Hershey syrup. What?
Huh?
$200 in cash, diabetes pill, and a daybook and a pay stub. So court records show that 15 years earlier, on February 28th, 1991, this guy, Edward Haffey, arranged the murder of his ex-girlfriend, 39-year-old Georgia Lee Dutton. Weird. Ooh. That my name is Georgia and my sister's nickname is Lee.
Yes.
Not really.
A little bit. A touch of weird.
Let's go a little. Her decomposed body was later found along the Umpqua River.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Near Roseburg. So I tried to look up details about her murder because I wanted to say some more about her, but I can't find anything at all. So he had pled guilty to conspiracy to commit aggravated murder in 1994 and spent the next 9 years in the Eastern Oregon Correctional Institution. And he had been released in November of 2003 for murder. Oh, God. Okay. Oh, my God. After he got out, he moved to Portland and in July 2004 was hired by none other than our fucking friend Mike Kuhnhausen.
The worst last name of all time. Name,
to clean floors at Fantasy Adult Video.
Oh.
So
they were workmates.
So, which is where the pay stub in his backpack was from.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And there's also a day book that had an entry that said, call Mike for September 4th, 2006, along with Mike's new cell phone number. So, like, not a good murderer.
No one's covering anything.
Not a good hitman.
No.
And he got killed instead of...
Well, so, I mean, the claw hammer is the indicator. This is not a hitman. This is a lunatic.
Yeah. Definitely. So on September 8th, Mike left a suicide note at his father's house saying, all I ever wanted was to be loved. And every time I had it, I fucked it up. No, dude, you're a piece of shit. Don't feel fucking sorry for yourself.
Yeah, this is not the time for if you've arranged the murder of your ex-wife. Right. It's not the time to talk about how hard things are for you.
Right. And how bad it is that you fuck things up. So then he takes off. 10 a.m. on September 13th, a deputy finds Mike in the parking garage of a Kaiser. Mike says he's checking himself in.
It's a Kaiser? Good yeah. luck. They won't have, they'll have you there for 10 minutes max.
Well, to a psychiatric hold.
Oh, sorry.
Whatever. Talking shit.
I didn't realize Kaiser had any psychiatric services available.
Well, let's go try it.
I will.
Right now.
I will.
So police put him in involuntary psychiatric hold. Then they put him under arrest for conspiracy to commit murder. Obviously, he had a motive. He had lost his job weeks earlier. He had no place to live. Susan had named her brother as the beneficiary on her life insurance policy, which is so smart because she was like, I'm divorced. Like, she must have had some fucking,
yeah,
you know. And Mike knew that, but Susan and Mike had paid off that house, and it was worth about $300,000, and it would be all his if Susan died. So Mike claims he has nothing to do with it, but there's no signs of forced entry at Susan's home, and the security record showed someone had disabled the alarm while Susan was at work. Mm-hmm. Mike later said he had just dropped the note off, but they were like, you let this fucking killer inside. And he's like, no, I didn't.
Oh, the note was like his cover of like, that yeah. proves that I was there, but it wasn't my thing.
I was there and I disabled the alarm, but it was so I could leave this note. And they're like, yeah, but clearly you just fucking let this guy in at the same time.
Yeah. And also if they're getting a divorce or divorced, why would she give a shit if he's going somewhere? Like,
right.
Tell me when you get back that you went somewhere.
Right. No, it's very stupid.
Yeah.
So blah, blah, blah. All these other little things happen and we know it's him. The promise was a $50,000 payday for the dude who killed her, who got killed. On August 30th, 2007, Mike pleads guilty to soliciting?
Maybe.
Susan's murder. Okay. And then, so the hitman's aunt writes a letter to Susan in 2010. After all this takes place, saying, although this was a terrible thing that happened, no one in this family has any bad feelings towards you. You did what you were forced to do, and in doing so, you spared many from the same trauma you experienced.
That's right. Oh my God, that's incredible.
I know. So Susan filed for divorce the day after Mike's arrest.
Obviously. Oh, they were just separated.
Yeah, they hadn't divorced yet.
Okay.
And by 2014, she had moved to a new Portland home and like a crazy out of the way cul-de-sac. She said she felt like a, quote, a broken plate glued back together. Oh. Like she's just, it's so sweet that she's so fucking heartbroken about having to kill someone, even though the person she killed out of self-defense was the person who was sent to murder her.
That person who attempted to murder her.
Yeah, like very real seriously. She's a badass and she's justified as fuck and what an amazing person. And we all hope that we would act the same way in such a situation and we're in awe of her that she fucking did that. And it doesn't really feel that way, I think, when it happens, is what this shows us.
Right. It's like first, that's the effect that has on us, right? As first person.
Especially as a nurse who's like trained to save lives. That's yes. her point in life.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And she understands why people get into the situation where they're like, I'm doing so much coke, I think it's okay to kill someone yeah. with a claw hammer.
Yeah.
Ugh. Ugh. The worst.
So, blah, 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 blah. So she's super paranoid at this time. She says, I'm doing a life sentence for picking a bad husband, which is like, honey, don't put that on you. Yeah.
We're all broken plates. That's the thing.
We're all broken plates.
We're all broken plates.
We've never been whole plates.
Yeah.
Maybe right when we were born, but.
Yeah, somewhere around. Yeah, I mean, it's different for everybody.
How old? Two? Like this podcast?
For me, I would say it really was preteen. That's when
you broke.
I was just like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, I see that. I think when we first have memories, so, like you have a memory because something happens.
True.
You know?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think around five or six, I think for me.
But that experience would be, that's something you really have to work through.
Yes. So Mike is supposed to be released on September 14th, 2014. So she's freaking the fuck out. She puts gravel all around her house so she can hear any footstep. She practiced shooting at a shooting range. And she said, if he came here, he was not going to get close enough to hurt me. So can you imagine how terrifying that is?
Yeah.
Then 92 days before his release on Friday the 13th of 2014, Mike died of prostate cancer in prison at 65 years old.
Shit.
Yeah. So her name is now Susan Walters. She continued to work as a nurse until December 2014. And today she's a motivational speaker and provides self-defense expertise for Portland's for Portland Police Bureau's Women's Strength and Girl Strength programs.
Yes.
And she's a go-to expert on victims' fucking rights.
Yeah.
She's an advocate and focuses on developing a web-based portal for crime victims. That portal provides a protected single point for victims to receive updates about their offenders. So, you know, like the people are like, no one fucking told me he was getting out of prison or today was his fucking parole hearing. I could have gone to and said what happened. You know, you can follow that now.
Yeah, that's great.
Amazing.
That's so important.
Victims of crime in Multnomah?
Yeah.
Multnomah County, is that right?
Yeah.
Can now follow their case, their offenders, and access resources through the website. It's casecompanion.org, and I think every fucking city should have this.
That's incredible.
And Susan says, surviving the event itself is difficult. Surviving a prolonged and protracted criminal justice journey is also equally hard.
Yeah.
Which that's amazing. So she said, being an imperfect woman, I married an imperfect man thinking that we could love, honor, and negotiate and have a good life together. But he had issues around abandonment, anger, and anxiety that he couldn't overcome. She says that she and the family of Mike hopes that he finds the peace he didn't find in this world in death. And that's the story of badass fucking Susan Kuhnhausen.
Wow, that's amazing.
And there is a survivor. I survived about it.
Yeah.
That's good. I watched and it's good, but there's another story in it. One of the other two stories that's really fucking depressing.
Which one?
It's a girl who's closing up like the store she works in and gets held up and like they never found the person. It's just like really, and she's so fragile and like clearly like not ready to talk about it.
Yeah, that show is so good. It's so perfectly produced. It's so well done. But there are, I would say, about five where I watch and go, this person isn't ready and isn't. It's beautiful that they're doing it for themselves because I bet it's a great step for them.
And for other, I'm sure other people listen to it and hear it and see this woman telling the story and they're so empowered by her.
Yeah.
But she just seems so fragile. And it made me really sad.
But it's also the reality of it.
Yeah.
It's the reality of it.
It totally is.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
That show is incredible.
Yeah. And then there was a family whose fucking boat like capsized.
It's always
they were cool too.
I dipped into a frozen river. It's like, okay. And I feel bad for you, but there's a woman who's fighting off a fucking claw hammer.
Uh-huh.
We need to get back to her now.
Can we real quick?
Real quick. Those are always the stories that end first. You notice that?
Where yeah.
It's like the boat capsizes,
right.
They get rescued. And then they're like, well, God helped me out of the ocean.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll talk to you later. Hey, Susan.
What did God not help you out of? Can you tell us? God helped them out of the ocean. What did you ever do?
And she's like, well, I became an emergency room nurse and fucking nailed some shit to the wall.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, it's intense.
Yeah.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
All right. Well, I went a little culty with mine for this week.
Good.
I think because somebody recommended on Twitter, and I'm sorry I didn't write your name down, because I get very defensive when people recommend British procedurals to me, as you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm always like, how dare you come to me with a Wallander recommendation? Yeah. We've talked about this a lot. But
let's
still like
it. More.
What?
Let's talk about it more.
Let's really do a deep dive.
This is about you.
But somebody recommended a show called Silent Witness. And it is basically it's like a Law and Order in England, where there are on iTunes, it's seasons 1 through 4 and then season like 17 through 29. Like, it's been on for a
procedural?
Really long time. It's a procedural. Okay. And it's basically about the coroner and the medical examiner.
And who's the silent witness? The coroner?
The coroner medical examiner?
Or maybe dead the body.
Dead body? Dead body,
I'm
going to
need answers.
Anyway.
It's a cat. There's a cat that lives in the coroner's office.
It's the coroner's cat, like a bodega cat, but in the... where it just is up on a shelf.
Can I just say there's an Instagram called Bodega Cats of Instagram?
Yeah.
And it's made me never want to eat at a bodega again, because just the photos, I mean, they're adorable, but cats' assholes on everything in
on
a
everything.
Bodega. Like...
Yeah.
Any fucking bag of Gardetto's fucking chips you get, a bodega cat's asshole.
Just do a quick Clorox wipe rinse on the outside of that bag.
I can never lick a bag of Gardetto's again.
That's how you pick what flavor you want, is you lick the outside.
They taste like what they're supposed to taste like, right?
I gotta say, that's right. The outside tastes like the inside. Just like people. I love fucking New York City bodegas so much. As a country girl who, we always lived 5 miles away from anything good.
Yeah.
When I lived in New York, the idea that I could walk down the stairs from my apartment and literally 40 feet to the corner and go in and get a bag of Tate's. They always have Tate's. They always have Haribo gummy bears.
They have some weird like brand of ice cream sandwiches.
Yep.
And the word bodega sounds so cool.
It sounds very much like, hi, I'm an art student. Yeah. I sometimes freebase Coke, but I also just love to come and get an Italian sub sandwich.
Oh my God.
Okay. So anyway, I went because I had watched, I think, 4 seasons of Silent Witness, and there were some, it's very dramatically produced, and there's a lot of like her just standing over a dead body being like, you know, the victim is in rigor, where you're like, okay, this is very real. Like, it's.
Because it's boring?
It's a touch boring.
Get it.
They're not afraid to go boring in England.
Because that's what it's really like.
Because it's real. There's one where it was about a bunch of people who died on a boat. And then every time, so they were just sitting there waiting at the harbor, waiting for the dead bodies to get transported in from the ocean. Uh-huh. And then every time it would, there would just be this terrible horn that would sound. And I was like, I bet this is what really happens. This is awful. Like,
this
it's
is
like,
when I turn it off.
Exactly. Cause you're like, I don't want to experience this. Maybe it will happen to me someday. So how about I don't go through it now?
Right. I don't want to hear "ooga" in my fucking show that I'm watching.
Why do they keep driving dead bodies up in these jalopies? It's not funny. It's not. I don't appreciate it. Okay. So anyway, I had a lot of that. So then I was like, well, let's take a nice left turn and go into a little cult area.
Great.
And I thought about the one that I've always been obsessed with, which is the Order of the Solar Temple.
Oh my God.
So this was the one where on October 4th, 1994, and this was on, so remember back, 94.
Remember it.
It was on all the news.
And, I don't remember this.
Okay. Get ready. Because you might as, I encourage you to yell out when you remember.
I'm going to. Okay. You don't have to encourage me.
Okay. So... October 4th, 1994, it's a place called Morin, I'm assuming it's pronounced Morin Heights. It's a ski resort near Montreal. And authorities are called to the scene of a burning condominium. Mm. And when they get inside, put the fire out, they find 2 charred dead bodies. So they look up who owns the condominium, and on the... whatever mortgage papers I put owner
stuff.
The signage page area. The owners are 2 men, Joseph DeMombro and Luke Jouret. So they assume that's these 2 charred bodies are the owners. But then, as the investigators make their way through the burned condominium apartment, they find 3 more bodies in the back in the back of the house, in like stacked in a closet. Mm. And those bodies are identified as a man named Tony Dutoit or Dutoit and his wife Nikki and their 3-month-old son Christopher Emmanuel.
Are they burned too? Or are they just
burned? But then once the investigators start looking into it, they realize that the front two bodies and the back bodies are all covered in blood. So before they burned, they were covered in blood.
Oh my God.
So then they're like, something actually happened here. Well, then on Tony's body, he was stabbed over 50 times in the back.
Holy shit.
Nikki was stabbed in the chest and like upper body area like 6 or 7 times.
Oh my God.
This is the worst part.
No.
The baby was stabbed in the heart with a wooden stake. So they're like, what the fuck kind of occult shit is going on here?
I have never heard this before.
It's shitty.
Tell me everything.
Okay. So they realize that one of the two bodies that they found originally up in the front of the house, one of them is a woman.
Okay.
So they're like, I don't think this is the owner. Something insane happened here. So that they put out arrest warrants for the owners. The police discover that all 5 of these people were members of the Order of the Solar Temple, which was a very secretive sect founded by the two men on the owner's papers, Joseph DeMombro and Luke Jouret. Then the police find out that Tony and his wife, Nikki, had recently left the cult after speaking out against these leaders.
Mm-mm.
And so that's when the cops are like, okay, we got to arrest these guys. But they're nowhere to be found. The next day, or it's the same, let's see, it's October 5th in the Swiss village of Siri, is how it's pronounced. There's a farmhouse that's on fire. And when the firemen in this Swiss village go there and put it out, they find the owner inside. He's slumped over the kitchen table and there's a plastic bag over his head. So they think, oh no, he's an elderly farmer and he's committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Then they find a gunshot wound in the back of his head.
Mm-mm.
And they're like, uh-oh. So then they inspect the house, they start finding incendiary devices all over the house. And then they start looking in the outbuildings on the property. So there's more buildings aside from the farmhouse. They start to investigate these buildings. They also have these incendiary devices in them. And one of them, one of the cops observes that the outside of the building is really big, but when they go in, it's really small. There's just a small space and it's like an office that looks really busy. It looks like there's people that come there to work every day or whatever, but it's compared to the outside, they're like, they start looking for secret panels.
Ooh.
And they find one. And basically what happens is an entire section of wall is found to be able to slide back.
Oh my God.
On the other side of this wall, they find a huge secret chamber. It's decorated floor to ceiling in red.
No.
It has these weird mirrors on every wall that at the top are kind of shaped a little bit like, I don't know what the word is. It's like that, you know, like the top of a Turkish turret or whatever, where it looks like a Hershey's Kiss.
But swoopy.
Fatter. Yes.
Okay.
Anyway, it's all like ritualized. Mm-hmm. There's weird, these weird stands, like lecterns that are gold that are in there. And there's, and then they, so basically it's all obviously used for some kind of religious rite.
Some straight up culty bullshit.
There's champagne bottles on the ground.
Okay.
And in the middle of the floor, arranged, in a like star formation, feet in the center, what? Head to the outside, are 18 corpses.
Shut the 18?
18. They're all wearing either red, gold, or black ceremonial capes. And some have plastic bags over their heads. Then they find a second secret room. There's 3 more bodies inside that room. And there's a ton of blood in both rooms.
Oh my God.
So, the police basically start putting together.
Can you imagine stumbling upon that?
No, it's
A, stumbling on a fucking secret hidden room.
Yes.
Like, which is awesome.
The roller coaster of emotions that cop went through, where he's like, I'm the one that, hey, I didn't. And then they slide the wall back and it's like, well, here you go.
Yeah. This is what you wanted.
Here's your secret room, friend. So they realize that this is obviously a ritualized mass suicide.
Yeah.
But there's so much blood in the room. They're like, oh, this wasn't voluntary for a lot of these people.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And most of the people had been killed by gunshot wounds to the head that were not self-inflicted. So that's how they start putting together that this was perhaps non-voluntary suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Or, as we like to call it,
murder.
Okay.
Non-voluntary suicide.
The worst kind of suicide. Non-voluntary. I am a professional cop. Okay. So then 2 days later, 100 miles away in the Swiss resort village of Grange-sur-Salvan. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. You know it sounds nothing like that.
Yeah, but it sounds better when you say it.
I'm trying to sell it like I'm a waitress at a fancy French cafe, right?
Would you like a croque monsieur?
Or a grand chasse-souvent?
Yeah.
Okay, so, which is French for baked onion. Okay, the fire department is called to now three adjacent chalets that are all on fire. And inside each, they find eerily similar scenes to the Syrie fire. This time, 25 bodies are discovered.
Oh my God.
Including three teenagers and four children. And what? Most of these bodies, these victims, have been poisoned. And they're all identified through dental records to also be members of the Order of the Solar Temple. And in this situation, only 15 of the 47 were true suicides. The rest were murders. So now the search for the co-founders of the Order of the Solar Temple goes international.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, this cult was founded by this guy, Joseph de Mombro, who was born in southern France. He studied to be a clockmaker and a jeweler, but he always had interest in the occult. And when he was in his 30s, he joined the Rosicrucians, or the Order of the Rosy Cross. And it's another, so there's all these secret cults or sects that are based on the Knights Templar.
Mm-hmm.
So the Knights Templar were, the knights who went on the first crusades and they came back, and then they were so dedicated to this spreading of Christianity down into the Middle East that they began to protect. It was like they vowed to protect all these Christian pilgrims that were going down into the Middle East. So they basically kind of were out there protecting people, but they also made a ton of money because of the crusades. They were just out there, you know, obviously killing and pillaging and doing all their stuff. So they became very rich. Then their power, they were so well regarded that they became really powerful. And of course, then the popes were like, who are these motherfuckers? We're supposed to be the most powerful. So then they became hunted. And then that's when they went underground and it was all secret, secret, secret.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what all these people, and that's kind of like the Dan Brown books and stuff where it's all the Knights Templar this and the Knights Templar that.
If the guy or gal who does animate my podcast would animate that part of you telling me explaining to me the crusades,
because it's I would guess that. Right now,
yeah,
and hopefully there is a history professor listening.
Oh yeah,
I think I probably got that 57% right.
Okay.
I think I would have passed a test, but not well.
Right. A D plus,
which is pretty happy. Much my average.
And now, and you, it would make you happy.
Now,
and then the press would be like, you're not supposed to be happy about that. You're like, I fucking passed, bitch.
I passed, bitch, and I never thought I could.
Yeah.
Because I can't read. So definitely let me know all the information I'm missing in the 300 years that the Knights Templar were in action.
Right.
But essentially, it became that thing, and we've all seen the Dan Brown, what is that book that I can't think of?
The Da Vinci Code.
Thank you, Stephen. Stephen loves literature. But it's just this idea that essentially they were protecting Mary Magdalene, who was carrying Jesus's baby. You know, that's like at the end of the day, that is supposedly what do they call that? The
truth. The Bible.
True.
Christianity.
What's the cup?
Oh, the Kiddush cup.
Holy Grail.
Thank you. Oh. The Holy Grail is Jesus's baby, right?
It's also called the Kiddush cup. We had it first.
Oh, that's true.
So don't come at me with a fucking...
Yeah, you explain it to me. I don't fucking know what's going on. Anyway.
This is a religion podcast.
It's all about now. Secrets. Okay. They base this whole thing on like secrets, hidden treasure, hidden money, making sure that they could always kind of get this, the Christianity where they needed it to go.
Okay.
And have missionaries protected and
okay,
all that.
So secret societies are like, gotta keep it up, keep up with the Christians.
Right. But then as we know, when things are secret, then little power structures come up and then suddenly you've got two people that are like, well, I'm in charge of the secret sect and now I've decided we're going to do a little something extra. We're going to wash everybody's feet in a bucket. Right? We're going to do, they start adding their own shit and it's like, no longer are you a Knights Templar.
Yeah. Now you're a foot washer.
Now you're some kind of like, I feel like everyone, every woman needs to fuck me before we start this ceremony.
How many times have I said this? Fuck the government.
And I'll say it again.
This is not my fucking phrase. That's right. Elvis fucking knows. He's like, I'm sick of you saying that.
He knows. He's so sick of it. Okay, so anyhow, I lost my place entirely. Okay.
That's what this podcast is called.
Where am I? In 1973, Joseph de Mambro moves to the Swiss border. He starts a group called the Center for the Preparation of the New Age.
Okay.
So you know hot stuff is happening in this group. Let's get together. Let's weave some looms. Let's fucking make pottery.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Knights Templars.
What year is this again?
73.
Okay.
And he begins to tell his followers or the people in the group that he is the reincarnation of the god Osiris and of Moses. And then he starts telling them, you're the reincarnation of Napoleon and you're the reincarnation of Cleopatra. And everybody's the reincarnation of some famous political leader or royalty of some kind.
Doubt it.
And then he starts telling them, he's the one that's going to decide who's having a relationship with who, because he's the only one who knows who they were originally were. And now we have this chance to breed a master race of children. Mm-hmm. So let's make sure that like Cleopatra has sex with Napoleon or whatever. And he's making up all this shit. Yeah. And people are like, yes, sounds good.
And everyone's like, yeah, we want a bone.
Yeah, we want a bone and we want to be dead special. Famous people.
Right.
So he basically is like, I'm in charge of who gets married. I'm in charge of who gets to have children.
Whoa.
So it becomes, he goes from like, we're a group that gets together to talk about how rad the Knights Templar are. And now it's like, I control every aspect of your life, which is how it always goes. Even though that's how intense and bizarre it was, all these respected citizens and extremely wealthy people join this thing because it's all about the, he sells this idea that you, if you give enough money, you can like absorb the spirituality and power of the Knights Templar. It's this honorable society and you join it and you're forwarding the Christian movement or what, I don't know, whatever. So.
Because rich people get bored is really what that means.
They get bored and we all want guarantees, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to give this guy who claims to be he also claimed to be the reincarnation of a 14th century knight templar, whatever, and then the other guy, Luc Jure, he claimed to be the third incarnation of Jesus Christ. He went straight to the top.
So
basically people are getting into it, and at that time he changed the name. Joseph de Mambro in 1978 changes the name to the Foundation of the Golden Way. He takes a core group of the followers and is like, we're super into this. Let's go start the Foundation of the Golden Way. And in that group, that's when Luc Jure shows up. Luc Jure was born in the Belgian Congo. He studied to be an actual doctor. Then he decides he's not into like traditional medicines and he wants to be an alternative healer. So then he starts getting really into holistic medicine and really into new age shit, and he starts he becomes like a star on the new age circuit. He's the one that like in the mid late 70s is out there telling everybody, here's how you tap into your inner the god Osiris, right, or whatever the fuck it is.
When you stop worrying about gas, you don't have to worry about gas prices and fucking having a job and money.
Right.
Because you're wealthy.
Yeah, don't worry about any of the things that everybody else in Jimmy Carter's America are freaking out about.
Right.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, because you have enough money, so come join a cult.
Come secret sect with us.
Yeah.
So when they meet, Joe DiMambro knows that this guy, he's like the face man. He's going to be the perfect pitch man for their new cult, which they, in 1984, basically reconfigure. Yeah, it's going on for so long. They reconfigure and call themselves the Order of the Solar Temple. So that's when Luke Jouret comes into Joe DiMambro's life. That's when it all clicks.
Okay.
So basically, in this group, they have these rituals that are based on ancient Christian and Masonic rites. It's all secret. So all the members are secret, all that, you know, nobody tells anybody else that they're in this group. Mm-hmm. And at its height, they had lodges in Canada, Australia, Switzerland, and Martinique.
I mean, I'll join just to fucking go on vacay.
I mean, right? You know, to just go to an island and then pretend you're Cleopatra.
Skiing and shit.
Skiing in Martinique.
Great.
That was a joke, everybody. I know Martinique is a beautiful island. So soon, the topic changes. And when I say soon, I mean after 7 years or whatever the fuck.
Soon.
These people stay in this weird cult. They start sending this message that an apocalypse is coming. Mm-hmm. It's an environmental apocalypse. Man has caused it. It's man's fault that it's going to happen. And only the elite are going to survive it.
Oh, great.
So if you want to be in that group, why don't you kick down all of the money that you have?
No.
Yeah, they make everybody give them all of their money.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and it's this insurance. So eventually that message becomes the reason that you should trust us is that Joe's daughter, whose name was Emmanuel, she was one of nine existing cosmic children who would lead them all to a planet that was next to the star Sirius. And his son also, Eli, I believe his name was, his destiny, Eli's destiny, was to usher in the new age. So luckily, the leader of this cult's two children were the key pieces to get them to. So basically, the Earth was going to end for environmental reasons. And then they were going to travel via a path of fire to a planet that's next to the star Sirius. Everyone's like,
it's crazy, and I want to be like, how the fuck? But like, there's the podcast Heaven's Gate that's like super good. That my sad retelling of the Heaven's Gate story last week before the podcast came out. By the way, I didn't know about it yet.
It was good.
They focus on a couple actual cult members and explain how it happened, and you kind of get it a little more. But it's just so bananas and bonkers.
I think it comes down to that feeling of when life feels really plain all the time.
Yeah.
And then you get introduced to an idea of you're special.
And there's more than this, and you're correct. Everyone else is going along with their everyday life, and
they're all lemmings. You're special. Yeah. I see how special you are. Come in, do my ritual.
Yeah.
Let me shoot you in the back.
I have knowledge.
Yeah.
And that I will impart onto you.
Yes.
Listen, I'm starting a cult right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm believing.
Are you
this.
In here?
Are you the god Osiris?
I have Elvis sitting on my lap staring at me.
She is petting a cat in a kind of evil cult-like way.
Yep.
Okay,
I just uncross his eyes.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
She's real.
Yeah.
So basically, this talk goes on so long that, of course, nothing ends up happening. And the members are like, yeah, okay, you've been talking about this apocalypse for a while. Nothing's going on. Mm-hmm. And I've given you millions of
Make
dollars.
The apocalypse happen.
Yeah, I want everyone else to die. I want to see what you're talking about. I want these things to happen.
Right.
Well, also, meanwhile, they started getting, of course, super crazy with their power. They were buying houses everywhere. They had everybody's money. Mm-hmm. So they're out they've got houses here. Now, you know, as you saw, chalets and condos in every city.
They're hiding fucking rooms.
They can build things that look like small rooms, but that are actually big rooms.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And so the members are like, yeah, you seem to be getting a lot of stuff, but all of our, you know, it's on our dime.
Yeah.
Then Luke Jouret is voted out as Grand Master of the Canadian branch of the Temple of the
How
Solar.
How mad is he?
Because he starts to demand that that one woman has sex with him before every ritual for his to build strength. And everyone's like, okay.
No.
But he's getting, everyone's starting, he's like, all the members are like, you're losing your shit. And it's obvious and it's creepy. So then he gets voted out. Well, then Joe DiMambro is just like, wait, no, it's our cult. Yeah. Like, you can't get voted out. What are you doing?
This isn't a fucking fantasy island or whatever.
Yeah. You mean Survivor?
Yes.
Yes. You knew. Just as a bit of information, Luc Jouret, it shouldn't be a surprise that he lost his shit, because before joining the Order of the Solar Temple, he had belonged to a racist neo-Nazi magical organization. Co-founded by a former Gestapo officer named Julian Origas. And he was also an illegal arms dealer. So he wasn't a great, like, he wasn't a nice
Templar.
Do
a little background check, rich people.
Yeah. Are you a good guy? Can you ride a horse? God. Are you an arms dealer? These things should disqualify you. So then, this is all building, right? So they're like losing control. Like, it's like, no, focus on my cosmic daughter or whatever. Yeah. Then in February of 1993, it's the 54-day siege of Waco.
Oh, shit.
Right? So on all of our TVs, we all saw the Branch Davidians and David Koresh and everything. We saw that whole thing go up in flames.
Is that going to be a podcast soon or a TV show?
I think it's a TV show.
Like a documentary.
I think it's one of those American crimes or something,
American experience? I want to see a good documentary. Oh, that'd be fun.
Just the longest American dad of all time. he works for the CIA. So, okay. So after that happens and everybody watched it on TV.
And everyone's like, oh, no more cults for me.
Exactly.
I think I've had enough. I'm full.
Is the funniest thing in the world to me, where they're like, oh, this is where we're headed. Yeah. We're not actually headed to a planet next to the star Sirius.
No.
We're just going to burn government style.
Right.
Fuck the government.
Listen, it's the government.
Okay. So
please don't hurt me, government.
That won't work. So
it's too late.
This is my favorite part. So as all of this is, right, it's crumbling. Our millions, you know, people are walking away, our secret. And they really did have, they had millionaires, they had scientists, they had famous architects. There was people in this cult, very high level people, a very famous Swiss composer.
So it was like a bunch of smarty pants.
Smarty pants and Richies.
Smart and Richie fucking asshole.
I mean, the whole place smelled like fucking aftershave. So what are we saying? So, okay. Then they discover that, so our friend Tony Dutoit, I don't remember how I pronounced it, the man who was found stabbed 50 times in the apartment in Canada.
With his wife and daughter and baby.
And his wife and baby. Uh-huh. Okay. So it turns out he was a longtime member of the Order of the Solar Temple, and he discovered, so, they would have these rites and rituals, and when Joe DiMambro did them, he could make things fly. He could make things like appear out of nowhere. There's all these weird things he did that made people believe that he was special and had special powers. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out Tony Dutoit discovers that he was using lasers and holograms.
No.
And he was
back in 90. I'm impressed by that in 94.
Yeah. Even earlier.
Yeah.
He basically set it up so the whole thing was like special effects and fog and light show or whatever, and made people believe it was his power. Jesus. And he was spending their money, a ton of money, because a hologram back then was very expensive.
It's basically like a Coachella fucking DJ set.
Yeah, but just him and 12 people in robes. So Tony finds out about this and starts going, you guys, this is super fake. The whole thing is a fraud, to the point where, and so much, like distrust and, disillusion was going through the whole cult, down to Joe DiMambro's own children, who were like, my dad's a fraud. Yeah. Like, everybody was starting to bail.
I am not a space cadet. My dad is lying.
I can't lead you to that planet.
No.
But that's my favorite, that it was like the straw that broke the camel's back was that his holograms and lasers were discovered.
Yeah.
So then everyone's just bailing like crazy. Okay. So then, so basically Tony tells everybody and then like gets out of town. So Joe DiMambro announced to the remaining members that the Dutoit's 3-month-old son was the Antichrist and needed to be assassinated.
Oh, no.
Yes. That's so, So the two bodies that were in that condo from the beginning of this story turned out to be 35-year-old Jerry Jeannot and 60-year-old Colette Jeannot.
What?
They murdered the Dutoits, murdered that baby, and then committed suicide and lit that apartment on fire with the incendiary device that was like all the incendiary devices in Switzerland. Yes. So
what awful, awful people.
So crazy. And then, like, once they knew that was happening, they know it's over. So they announced to the rest of the membership that the apocalypse has arrived and it's time for all of them to travel to the planet next to the star Sirius.
Well, let's go.
So it's mass suicide time. And because they were saying the transformation takes place in fire, that's why all those incendiary devices, that's where all the buildings were burning. Mm-hmm. So
what were the incendiary devices made of? Do you know?
I don't, but in my mind, it looks like a light switch with the plate off the front.
Yeah. And like, there's a little thing tied to this thing and a little,
and then a mouse chews the rope.
Yes.
Right. And then boom.
Yeah. But the mouse survives.
That's right.
Mouse is fine.
The mouse is innocent. And then a cat swoops down and eats the mouse.
Yay.
So it was at that farmhouse from the beginning in Syrie, where Joe DiMambro and Luc Jarret met their end along with 21 other members.
So they were, okay.
They were in Syrie. So that was basically, the reason that it's so amazing to me is because I remember very distinctly when I saw it on the news, they were so vague and it's still, you can barely get any good information.
Never heard of this.
What was really happening. But I remember seeing it on the news and being like, I want to know more.
Yeah.
And all you ever heard was, so then again, in 1995 in Grenoble, they find 16 bodies out in the forest.
What?
In an area they called Hell's Entrance or Hell's Hole or something, which is super creepy. And the creep that you can see a picture online, it's a forest. There's police tape. It looks like it's from like a helicopter. There's police tape. And then it just looks like there's a weird orange light. It's super creepy.
I fucking Google weird murders, weird deaths, weird, what the fuck, you know, all the time. And I've never heard of this.
Fold some Knights Templar in there. Fold in cult.
Okay.
Fold in. Well, so in that forest, there were 16 bodies. Okay. And this is a year later. Then 2 years after that in Quebec, in March of 97, 5 people are found dead. And at the last minute, 3 children who were supposed to also die convinced their parents, who ended up dead, convinced their parents that they wanted to live, and their parents let them go. So 3 kids escaped.
I
want to
interview them.
Right?
What's the, why, they're still killing themselves even though it's over?
Yes. 2 years later.
Like, by who? Like, why?
It's so crazy. Or 3 years later. So the total number of deaths in the Order of the Solar Temple is 74.
Jesus.
And their members included scientists, architects, policemen, and children.
What?
And the group had between 400 and 600 members. It's estimated to have made in its prime $93 million.
Holy shit.
And in the Grenoble scene where in 1995, where they found 16 bodies, the wife of famous champion skier Jean Varnay, who is the inventor of the awesome 80s sunglasses, his wife Edith and their youngest son Patrick were among the 16 victims. So they couldn't have been richer. Those people, they had Varnay in the 80s. Was like, you couldn't be richer.
Are they the ones with the swoopy thing here? The weird thing here? And
no, Varnays were like the kind of the original ski sunglasses. Oh, so yeah. They were mirrored and they were like kind of plasticky.
Yeah, every douche fucking skier instructor has this.
Rich guys. We went skiing the first time we went to Tahoe when I was 8. They made us take ski lessons. Mm-hmm. And my sister had a pair of Varnays on. And I, instead of listening to the ski instructor, just kept staring at myself in the mirrored reflection of my sister's sunglasses. So I didn't listen to how to stop or what to do. And so basically we went down one run and I was like, I need to take these off. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing this. I don't know what's going on. And then we just played in the snow all day.
Exactly.
Here's a more interesting one. Okay. Channel 4, the British TV station, they made a documentary alleging that Grace Kelly, the Princess of Monaco, was also initiated into the Order of the Solar Temple just months before her car accident that took her life. Yeah, she was in a car accident. Some say she was not in that car. Some say the body was never found. But her estate denies any association with the Order of the Solar Temple. But the filmmakers who made this documentary for Channel 4 talked to the acupuncturist who worked on Princess Grace before her orientation, or not orientation, initiation ceremony. And because apparently they did acupuncture to relax people so that they weren't like freaked out, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that woman attested to the fact that it was Princess Grace, but didn't want to give her name or information because she's scared, because she says that the Order of the Solar Temple is still in effect today, still has members, and she's scared of those members coming to retaliate
like
against her.
Like they're hiding out in plain sight. Steven!
And so the very last thing is, when Princess Grace's car crashed in Monaco, her car landed in the yard of a member of the Order of the Solar Temple. The end.
Karen.
Cult. Yeah.
That was good.
That was a good one, right?
That was a really good one. Shit, dude.
I know.
I want to know everything.
I want to know what these people talked about. There's photos.
Are there pictures?
Yes. There's pictures of... and it's all the faces are blacked out. There's black bars across the eyes of like an actual ritual. But then there's the empty room where they found the bodies. The ones I saw, it was just the room without the bodies lying in it. But then you can also see there's like graphs of how they laid out the bodies in star formation.
I want that.
Yes. And I think the people that killed themselves last in 1997 in Canada were laid out in a crucifix formation.
So the people who unintentional suicide, those people, did they ever figure out if they like were just like kill me, or they were like held hostage, or because like I could see people like, I don't want to kill myself, but just shoot me in the back of the head.
Yeah, I think what they were saying is the theory is that it wasn't, they were like, I don't want to do this.
It was
like, They went there for other reasons.
Oh.
Some of them think they were drugged or poisoned, but then they fought them because there was so much blood that it wasn't just like putting people down in an orderly fashion.
Yeah.
There was like, it was a real bloody crime scene. So they think that's what led them to believe it was against your will suicide.
That's crazy.
It's fucking nuts.
Man alive.
Mm-hmm. Secret cults. Where is the treasure hidden?
Ooh, there's treasure?
Treasure. Oh, yeah, the Knights Templar. They supposedly, that's like Nick Cage style. They supposedly have...
Oh, is that what that is?
Yeah, because they went and pillaged everything down in like the Holy Land.
They stole the shit from the fucking Jewish people.
That's right. That's right.
Chosen ones.
So it's your birthright.
Mm-hmm.
To go and find those gold doubloons and take them back.
Let's do it.
I would love to.
Let's go on an adventure.
Okay.
Okay.
Goodbye.
That was amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely. Love a cult.
What did we, we've come to the end, my friends.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a fun thing for this week?
A thing that made me happy?
Yeah.
No, do you?
Well, I do, actually.
Okay, great. Maybe it'll inspire me.
Okay, good. But this is it's a repeat of one I've done before, but it's in kind of an update, and it's very exciting because my favorite band, and now many other people's favorite band, Sure Sure, finally came out with an album. It's self-titled. It says Sure Sure. You can get it on Spotify. You can get it on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so goddamn good. It's all the like single releases that they had before. And then a bunch of new songs I've never heard before that are so beautiful. And it's just great. I just got it and I love it. So,
well, if we're going to do, this will be the music,
perfect
thing. Vince got us tickets. So Vince surprised me with tickets to go see the band Jawbreaker.
Nice.
Which I'm like super excited to go see them. I've never seen them play. I've been in love with them forever. Great old band. Everyone go listen. But it's also, I love that Vince does shit like that, and it's really sweet, and like, I would never go see music or anything live, but
yes.
Vince is like into that shit.
Yeah.
So like, he does it, and then I'm like, why don't I do this more? And then,
I know.
Yeah, so it's nice to
Because you have friends like me that are like, I'm tired.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go that night. Like that night, I'm going to be sick. Like I am every night. But it's sweet that he did it.
It's so good. Oh, wait. So it's future. You haven't done it yet?
Yeah, I haven't done it yet. He just bought tickets to go see Jawbreaker.
And that's awesome.
I'm, the, you know, 20 something year old Georgia is like, he put it on the radio today and I got really excited.
Yes. That's Yay. Exciting.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for listening, you guys.
Guys, thanks for once again going through that with us.
We have had it up to here with not going through this with you because we love it so much.
It's very fun. It's a very fun job. And on our 2 year anniversary.
Thank you, honey, guys so much.
Thank you so much.
We're so fucking lucky. This is the best ever.
It's crazy. Lucky. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Steven.
Thanks, Steven.
We'll thank you more in May.
In 6 months, yeah.
When you earn it.
When you've earned it. When you've fucking been through the shit like we have. The real shit.
When you finally fucked the government the way we need you to.
Elvis knows. He's been here from the fucking beginning.
He was here before us.
Yeah. He'll be here after us.
He will remain after we are gone.
Yep.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, then stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Bye.
Elvis? Want cookie?
Yeah.
Yeah.